Good day, and welcome to all of you. And as our previous conversation was so successful, I have chosen to move in that direction again in this conversation also, leaving it open to all of you to present your questions. And in that, what I would merely suggest is that you present questions that are actually involving some subject that is genuinely confusing or puzzling to you, or that you are genuinely struggling. That we can examine that and move in a direction that is more productive. And in this, perhaps also considering the idea of lessening some separation. I'm aware that many of you have been moving in a direction of late of being interested in a subject of connecting yourself as essence rather than viewing yourself as yourself and your essence as being something separate from you and something greater than you. Therefore, perhaps that may also be a subject that you may want to engage, but I will leave the subject matters to you and open the floor to all of you to present your questions for today.
Hi, Elias. This is Keith.
Welcome.
Hi. Hey. One of the things that really I really struggle with is a feeling, my own feeling of importance. And a lot of the material I've read from both you and from Seth states that there are we're always working with probabilities and then we make choices. And at that point, we split into two us's. And I guess I'm wondering how often that happens because I feel so insignificant. And I also feel like if I'm making a choice, I'm making choices every second. Am I splitting into other me's? And are those me's just as real as this me? And how do I know which me I am anymore?
Good question. What I would say to you is, yes, you are generating choices every moment of your existence. And in every choice that you generate, you also create simultaneously every other possible scenario for that same subject. Every other choice that could be generated in relation to whatever you are choosing in the moment, you are also creating all of those choices in alternate realities. Now, as I expressed quite some time ago in your terms, there is somewhat of a difference between a probable reality and an alternate reality. Alternate realities are created automatically in relation to every choice that you engage every moment of every day in your existence. Alternate realities are always being generated. And in that, what I would express to you is that is a subject that likely could be confusing and is not necessarily tremendously important for you in your life, other than knowing that there are no missed opportunities, that whatever you are choosing in your reality is not the one absolute choice. Therefore, what I would say to you is that that is an aspect of information that is significant, but in relation to all of these different realities and all of these different views of you, the most important one is the one that you know now and that your attention is occupied with. And in that, concerning yourself with alternate realities is not necessarily significantly important. Probable selves and probable realities are different. You create probable selves and probable realities in relation to what you might consider significant choices. Now, what that means is not that any choice is more important than another choice, but some choices alter your direction. You choose at times in relation to certain subjects that alter the direction that you are moving in your life, so to speak, such as going to school when you are a small one. That is a significant change in direction type of choice. Or if you don't go to school, that also is a directional choice. Whenever you generate a directional choice, that creates a probable self. The probable self is generated in a probable reality that, in a manner of speaking, to a degree, parallels your own reality. But that probable self also has the ability to generate its own choices. It is, in a manner of speaking, autonomous. And those probable selves are generated whenever you are creating choices that are directional choices. Having children, getting married, generating certain types of careers, or moving in certain types of relationships. Anything that creates a directional change in your life will also create a probable reality with a probable self. Now, there are time frameworks in which there may be a probable self that has already been created for many, and you may be tapping into an experience of that probable self. And that can explain certain types of experiences, such as an example, if you are, let us say, driving in your vehicle and suddenly you have a very vivid image of yourself in your vehicle, veering off the road, crashing into a tree, and perhaps even disengaging. But that doesn't actually happen. And you continue to drive your vehicle, and you aren't crashing into a tree, and nothing is actually happening to you. But your heart may be pounding, and that visual may be very vivid. The experience may be very vivid to you, and it might be unnerving. And you will perhaps wonder, why did you imagine that for no reason? And it seems very random. It isn't random, and it isn't for no reason. At times, you automatically tap into other probable realities of yourself, and you have either an impression or a vision or even an audio or an experience of what your probable self is actually doing or experiencing. And momentarily, that will be very vivid, as if you yourself are experiencing it, because you are, but not in this reality. Now, as for the significance of alternate selves or probable selves or alternate realities or probable realities, some individuals are merely interested in those subjects, just as some individuals are interested in physics, or some individuals are interested in philosophy or God. They are a subject, and probable realities and alternate realities are subjects also, and some individuals are interested in those subjects. Are they significantly affecting of you in your reality and your daily activity and your daily life? Not generally, other than these moments in which you do tap into the experience of a probable self. But that generally is very brief, and it doesn't generally affect your life. It doesn't affect your choices. It doesn't affect your life. It is a momentary experience that might be unnerving, or it might feel that you are experiencing some type of deja vu, or it might be inspirational. But for the most part, those experiences are very momentary, and they don't generally incorporate any type of significant or lasting effectiveness in your physical reality. Are those probable and alternate selves as real as you? Most definitely, yes, they are. Are they as significant as you? Most definitely, yes, they are. They are equally as important. They are equally as real. They are equally as valuable as you. But in practical terms, the effectiveness of a probable or an alternate self in relation to you and your reality and your choices and your directions is relatively minimal, other than if you are significantly interested in exploring that subject. But if you aren't, I would say that it isn't necessarily a subject that warrants you to concern yourself with it. And in that, it isn't a matter of who is making the choices for whom. You are making all of the choices. Therefore, it also is of little or no consequence or significance that it is a subject of what is first, the chicken or the egg. It matters not. I have expressed from the onset of this forum, there are countless, literally countless, views of you. But what is the most important is this attention. Because this is the you that you are engaging and that you are aware of.
Thank you. That is
going to chew on.
Hello, Christoph here. Can I ask a question regarding compartmentalizing?
Yes.
Okay. So it's a fascinating subject for myself, and I want to know whether I'm on the right track. Some time ago, you gave me a meditation method in which I focus on one of my senses. My favorite would be the sense of hearing, and connect with any source around me that makes a sound, for example, a bird or a car. And then I pull that sound inside myself and feel the harmony and resonance with it. The actual experience of that method after some time was that it seemed like all sounds I heard actually happened inside of me, and the sense of who I am expanded in all directions. So my conclusion is that for the practical purpose of everyday living and maneuvering my body around, in reality I must consider that what I am ends with my skin, but ultimately all the experiences happen inside of me. Or, to be more precise, I do not have an experience, I am the experience. So this conversation we are having now is an occurrence within myself, or this dimension is an expression inside myself. And I have more and more experiences where I actually feel that, and when I have faces of this kind of awareness, there's also zero judgment and full acceptance of others, regardless of their guidelines and other differences. So is that what you mean with not compartmentalizing, or am I going too far, or just wonder about that?
Oh, I would definitely express that you are not going too far. And that is definitely moving in the direction of expressing much less of that compartmentalizing and moving definitely in a direction of not compartmentalizing and recognizing much more clearly that interconnectedness. I would very much be acknowledging of that.
Okay, and it seems like I'm going in and out of these phases. So would you say I should kind of practice? Not pushing it in that direction, but more with a little bit more discipline going there?
It would definitely be a benefit for you to continue to practice, most definitely, because ultimately that is the point. That is, in a manner of speaking, ultimately the goal, is it not? To be present and to be self-aware, and therefore also to be aware of your interconnectedness. And in that, being aware of the reality that you are creating, what influences it, and having the ability to define your choices in your reality more clearly and more intentionally, which would include not only not compartmentalizing, but in that it affects everything, which would be being more aware of your constructs in every direction, which would be tremendously valuable. Being aware of your motivation for what you do and what you choose, what drives you, being much more aware of your desire as a very real expression rather than a fanciful idea, but that you would be aware of your desire as that actual engine that drives you. I would say that moving in the direction that you are and practicing with that to the point in which you aren't necessarily moving in and out of it unless you are doing it intentionally, but that you can maintain that awareness of that interconnectedness, and that you can maintain moving in an expression of not compartmentalizing is tremendous and is actually, in your terms, the goal, because that would be being self-aware, maintaining that self-awareness.
And one very short last question. What would you say in these times frames where I'm more self-aware, what percentage would that be of self-awareness?
Let me ask you, if I give you a percentage, how does that benefit you?
It's a funny thing. It's kind of, I can classify how much further I would not have to go, but can go. And it's kind of.
Well, what I would say to you is, it isn't a matter of how much further you have to go or can go, because there is no limit.
Okay.
Therefore, I would pose the question to all of you. How does it actually serve you, and what actually is the benefit of me offering you a percentage of anything?
But you started with it.
In any moment, I'm expressing that this has become somewhat of a almost fashionable question to ask. And at this point, especially in relation to this subject of not compartmentalizing, and being self-aware and interconnected. The idea of entertaining percentages is counterproductive.
As you remind me, when in these times when I was more self-aware, I realized how ridiculous that percentage is. But I forgot about that inside. But then when I'm less present, I guess it becomes important again.
Reminder.
Oh, thank you so much.
You are very welcome, my friend. And congratulations.
Thank you.
Hello, Elias.
Yes.
This is Veronica. I'm so glad that you are here to answer my question. It involves using crystals and a teacher, William Gilbert, who holds a doctorate in the ancient use of crystals and vibrations and the healing aspects of crystals. Now, my question is, since I had a patent on crystals and I love crystals, I'm just wondering if what he teaches, his methodologies, would be a valuable resource in healing, well, especially for me immediately. He refers to the energy centers, sounds, and color, which I employ, but I still have this health problem, and I'm wondering if the actual use of more crystal use would be beneficial. And does this have anything to do with my alignment with tumult? Would it be a directional change for me to pursue using crystals more intensely?
Not necessarily, because it is another method of healing, and you have been pursuing different methods of healing for quite some time. Therefore, it wouldn't necessarily be a directional choice. It would not be a different direction. It is merely another avenue of this direction of healing that you've already been engaging, because it interests you and because you want to and appreciate using different methods in relation to healing. As to would the incorporation of more crystals be helpful or be beneficial for you in association with healing methods? Not necessarily. I would say that for you individually, if you were concentrating your energy, not necessarily with more crystals, but with the crystals that you already have, if you were concentrating more energy in relation to them and in a manner of speaking, channeling your energy with them and through them. And that may be helpful to you in healing methods, because it may aid you in directing your energy more precisely. Therefore, it could be beneficial and it could be helpful to you individually. I would not say that necessarily as a blanket statement for everyone, but for you, yes.
Mm-hmm. In addition to meditating and using Reiki and the energy, the color of the energy centers and the sounds, I mean, it seems like a lot. Would it be putting my body on overload? I feel like I'm always doing some ritual or energy work on my body, and I still, you know, I still have this RA.
The
rheumatoid arthritis.
I'm understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would say to you is what I have expressed to you previously, that you do incorporate many methods and a considerable amount of time and energy and concentration in relation to healing methods, but you also incorporate a considerable amount of time and energy and concentration on the problem.
I understand what you are saying.
That I have given you suggestions on how to direct your attention at different times in other directions and be acknowledging what you are doing and what you are accomplishing, because it is a matter of interrupting that significant concentration on what isn't being accomplished.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'll have to work harder at that.
What I would say to you, my friend, is it genuinely isn't a matter of working harder at it. It is a matter of letting go. It is a matter of not fighting with yourself any longer. And as long as you continue to concentrate on how much you don't like and don't want this situation, and as long as you continue to move in a direction of being very concentrated on how to fix it, that is your indicator that you are still fighting with it. It isn't a matter of trying harder. It is a matter of stopping trying harder and letting go. Not making it important, rather than trying harder because it is more and more and more important. Perhaps contemplate that.
Hi, Elias. This is Panyas. Since we're getting close to the science wave, I figured it'd be apropos of me to ask a question dealing with physics. If an object is composed of 80% electrical energy and 20% magnetic energy, and you want, as traveling toward an object, you don't want to have it go, to repel it, do you need a field that's composed of 20% electric and 80% magnetic?
Not necessarily. You can. And in some situations that can be effective and that can be successful. But generating the opposite is not necessarily the only manner in which you could generate that success. Actually, you could generate that success by matching that energy, by generating the same. That also would repel.
Thanks, Elias.
You're welcome.
Hi. Do I have a question about imagination? I think there's more to it than what I think. I haven't read all the sessions. So you say imagination gives you inspiration and then it leads to action. And then there are also studies of patients, you know, visualizing bad cells shrinking or lessens the diseases or sometimes cures them. I'm like, what else does it do? Well, what else can happen?
Is that the question?
Well, no, that's not the whole question. Because when it comes to manifesting, I mean, there are times where I haven't done any physical actions and something happens. And I know you have said that you have to do something. Well, no. So I'm just a little confused. Do you not? Because this, what I thought was, if you imagined your energy goes out and attracts whatever it was and it meets you halfway at least or something.
That depends. It depends on what you are doing. And I would express to you that even when it seems that you are doing nothing, but you are creating something, you are doing something. You are never doing nothing. It isn't possible for you to do nothing because you are consciousness. Therefore, you are always in motion. You are always moving. You are always doing. And you are always choosing. Every moment is a choice. Every moment is a choice. Therefore, you might not be aware of what you are doing, and therefore you might think that you are doing nothing, and you are creating something magically, which surprises you and can be fun and can be in itself inspiring, but the idea or the statement that you create from nothing is false. You don't. You are always doing something. But as to imagination and inspiration and imagining something and projecting energy in relation to what you are imagining and in your terms, drawing to you or your imagination meeting you halfway, I understand what you are expressing. What I would say is that it isn't that some outside energy is meeting you halfway. that would suggest or imply that some other source is creating part of your reality, that you are co-creating reality with some other source, and you aren't. But I do understand how it seems to be that type of situation, or that you could interpret in that manner, that you might have an inspiration and you might be imagining and projecting an energy, and then at times it may seem that you magically create what you are imagining, which, in a manner of speaking, you are, because that is what magic is the expression of creating what you don't expect, or what is beyond what your senses tell you in their absoluteness, therefore is surprising, or magic seems to be the creation of what seems to be impossible. What I would say is, in that respect, you are creating magically semi-frequently, because you aren't necessarily objectively aware of what you are doing that moves you in a direction of what you are creating. But in relation to imagination, remember, imagination is an avenue of communication. Imagination doesn't create your reality any more than thought creates your reality, any more than emotion creates your reality. They are avenues of communication or translating mechanisms. What creates your reality is your perception. Now, in this, your imagination being an avenue of communication is valuable, because anything that you can imagine exists. It may not exist in your reality, but it does exist. Therefore, regardless of how bizarre or how strange or how improbable what you are imagining may seem to be, anything you can imagine exists. Your imagination is, in a manner of speaking, an endless library. It houses everything that ever has been. Everything that has ever been created, everything that has ever been conceived, everything that has ever been expressed is held in your imagination. Therefore, it is an enormous, endless library. In that, you have access to endless information. And in that endless information, dependent upon what your individual interests are, and what your exploration is, that information, those communications from imagination can spark inspiration. Inspiration is new. Inspiration is what you do with something that already exists and you add to it in some manner and therefore create something new. That doesn't necessarily mean that it will be a new physical manifestation. It may be a new idea. But whatever it is, inspiration is your response to imagination, to what already exists, and altering it in some manner to create your own expression in something new. Even if it bears resemblance to what you imagine, the inspiration changes it and creates some new aspect of that imagining, and therefore it does create something new. In that, it isn't necessarily that some outside source is being pulled to you and is meeting you halfway, so to speak. It is that you are engaging your imagination, that avenue of communication, and you're doing something with it. And in that, you are creating something new from it. And that is all you. But then, in relation to not compartmentalizing, being all you means being all of you in essence and in consciousness.
Okay, I think I confused imagination with manifesting then, because I was going towards the cheeseburger and my dog, where I both got them, but I didn't say or do anything and gave up on the idea of ever having both, but I got them. And so that's where I thought, well, maybe imagination helped, or that imagination is like a desire.
No. Imagination, as I expressed, is that enormous library of information.
Yeah.
But in accessing it, because it is an avenue of communication, in accessing it, it then generates within you your translation of certain aspects of it, which can create inspiration. And from inspiration, you can create new manifestations. Now, in relation to what you expressed in this moment about those choices and expressing that you couldn't have either and then you had both.
Yeah.
That is an example of what I was expressing to the previous individual. Not fighting with it and that letting go is giving up.
Okay. So that this is what, okay.
When you stop moving in directions of that concentration and you stop fighting and you do give up, you let go, that is when you are the most prolific in creating any manifestation and when you create most of what you do want. And this is what you, in a manner of speaking, learn within yourself in becoming more self-aware. Because then you see what is influencing you. You see how you compartmentalize. You see how you fight with yourself. You see how you make certain subjects important that aren't important. And that creates a fight within you. And fighting with yourself doesn't necessarily mean fighting in terms of what you are familiar with that word of fight. Fighting with yourself means hanging on to a concentration, not letting go. Insisting on moving in a particular direction, such as with the previous individual. The fight is, I don't like being uncomfortable. I have a physical manifestation, rheumatoid arthritis, that I don't like. It is uncomfortable. It is painful. It is restrictive of my physical movement. I don't like it. That is the fight. That making that piece of what you don't like and what you don't want and what is uncomfortable more important than what is comfortable. And you automatically think, but no, I'm not doing that because it is very important to me that I be comfortable, and that is the reason that I don't like this so much. Incorrect. You aren't concentrating on what you want. You are concentrating on what you don't want. And what you don't like, and what you aren't accomplishing, and what you think you can't do. Now, when you give up and you stop that fight of making what you don't like important, then you open that door, once again, almost magically, to actually manifest precisely what you want, because you stop the obstacles. Then there is no block in front of you. There is no obstacle to prevent you from generating what you want and creating what you want and being successful. What you generate as a barrier, as an obstacle, is that constant concentration on what you can't do or what you can't have or what you don't like or what is uncomfortable and what is dissatisfying. What is the basic principle? You always create more of what you concentrate on. You are concentrating on being uncomfortable, you create more being uncomfortable. If you are concentrating on being in pain, you create more being in pain. If you are concentrating on letting go, you open doors.
Okay, so just to be clear, after the concentration blocks are out, it's my energy that goes out and makes it happen. Because it was my neighbor who came to me and said, I saw a dog like yours on TV. So I went to go get her. So I did that.
Yes, you did that.
Okay.
You brought your neighbor to you.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get. That's what I was trying to understand.
You didn't make your neighbor see the dog on the television.
Oh, okay. What?
You placed yourself in your neighbor's path because your neighbor did see the dog on the television. Therefore, you placed yourself in a position to present that information to yourself.
Okay.
Do you understand?
Yeah. So does this mean I have to go out of the house more?
Not necessarily. That depends on you and what you want to create. But what I will say to you is, in becoming more self-aware and being more present and moving in the direction of genuinely recognizing interconnectedness, that is a factor. Because interaction is a factor. One moment.
You've started coughing.
Just a minute, gang.
And Bill started.
Okay, puppy. Okay, see you later. I need to interrupt everything. Bye. Continuing. Now, in that, what I would say to you is that in recognition of interconnectedness, it is important to be interactive. It is healthy to be interactive. Because the more self-aware you become, the more aware you become of the factor that you are very interconnected, and you recognize the importance of that. And that includes physical interaction. Therefore, in relation to, does that mean you have to leave your house more? It is a choice, but the more aware, the more self-aware you become, the more likely that will be a factor.
Okay, thank you.
You are welcome.
Elias?
Yes.
This is Wendy, Maisha. Kimmy had a very positive example, really, of what happens when you let go. And
I would agree. I would agree.
Yes. And the one before that was more of a negative example of what happens when you don't. And I was in that camp. But I can just sort of approaching this from a different direction. I was very focused on how I didn't like my life, how I didn't like my job, how what I was doing was really hard. I was very much enjoying drinking because it gave me a release from all the things I didn't like. and then I was forced to give up my concentration on that when I had a stroke. And I just couldn't focus on all that stuff I didn't like because I had to focus on dealing with everything around me. And, you know, just I couldn't walk across the room. And once I gave up, once I was forced to give up all that, things magically started to happen. Like, you know, they said I had a stroke, and I was like, this wasn't really a stroke. I mean, I'm getting this, I can do these. I started to just get better really quickly. All of my resources came to the fore, and I just started healing. They didn't give me any medicine for several days, and I could do all these things, and everybody told me I was doing so well. And then after that, I lost my job. And I'm really glad that happened because I was too dumb to see that I really, or I how to be able to let go of it. But then I had to let go, and money came to me because I had unemployment. And I mean, I'm in a whole different reality now, and I'm relatively happy with it. I mean, I don't know what to do because, you know, you think when you had a stroke, you wanted to go back to where you were, but I don't want to go back to where I was. so I had to find another job. Well, I had to find something other way to make money. I could not manage to bring money to me doing what I thought I enjoyed the most, which is what you suggested. But I can still try because that avenue is open. I have a part-time job and it's working with children, which is I find very soothing, sometimes challenging, but the interaction is important to me, really important. And the energy they have is really great. but when you are really forced to let go, however that happens, it does, you know, you start functioning and it seems like magic. It does. And I remember I would be walking down the street sometimes and I would feel like I was going to start floating. And you know, it was very important to me to not fall when I'm walking down the street. Now I'm walking without a cane, which is, you know, I still don't feel steady. And partly it's that floating feeling, but my life feels like it's floating. And I'm kind of nervous about, you know, getting back into something where there's all these requirements and I get uptight. But anyway, I mean, I sort of picked a weird way to do it, but I managed this letting go, and it was really great.
And I am tremendously acknowledging of you, and in that I would express whatever method allows you to be successful in that action of letting go is what you can consider to be a positive. Because I would say to you, my friend, most of you don't let go until you give yourself no other choice.
What is it that's so attractive about forcing yourself to do things that you don't want to do?
What is it that is so attractive? Control.
Oh.
The idea of control.
That brings me to another question that I've been thinking about since the beginning, which is this wanting to compartmentalize. It seems to me, I mean, when I want to compartmentalize, it's like how to deal with reality. And, you know, it's sort of, I wonder what the difference is between expanding your awareness and not compartmentalizing and being crazy. I mean, you have to be able to function, you know? So that, for me, the control thing, I mean, I feel like that comes with being able to function. Reality as it stands right now, it seems to me.
Repeat.
When you expand your awareness, it's infinite, really. I mean, this imagination and probabilities and all the different things, your other focuses, all that, there's so much of it there that it's a little bit hard to concentrate on the things you need to function in physical reality. The things you need to do to function.
I would say I understand what you are expressing, because it is unfamiliar to you. But in actuality, when you actually do move in the direction of being more self-aware and letting go and not compartmentalizing, you are moving in that direction of not compartmentalizing by being more self-aware. And in doing so, you are incrementally, in a manner of speaking, checking off the boxes of what is important to you and discovering how many subjects, how many things you make important that aren't actually important. And in doing so, it isn't actually overwhelming, and it isn't actually ultimately confusing either. When you actually are moving in that direction, because you are lessening the compartmentalizing through the action of recognizing that many, many, many expressions that you thought were important, that you have made important, aren't actually important.
And so you're lessening what you have to concentrate on because you're throwing stuff out.
In a manner of speaking, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's good information for me.
And therefore, you don't require all that compartmentalizing.
Okay.
You have learned to compartmentalize, yes, precisely because of what you expressed. because you have complicated your reality so much, and you have included so many variables in it, and you have made so many things important that aren't actually important, and that you don't even actually believe are important, but you aren't defining what you do express is important. Therefore, you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of subjects and ideas and things that are supposedly important to you, and that you have to engage, and that you have to express, and that you have to do. And in that, the more self-aware you become, the more you begin to see genuinely all of these subjects that you have made important that actually aren't important, and you begin to simplify.
I'm thinking of paperwork. I mean, you know, there's things you have to do or this or that won't happen kind of thing. And, you know, I need to entertain the possibility that.
Now, remember what I expressed quite some time ago in your time frame. About this shifting consciousness, that one of the actions of this shift in consciousness is that individuals are moving in the direction of doing what they enjoy doing and what is fulfilling to them, which also moves in the direction of connecting with the subject of altering your foundation of exchange in relation to money.
Yes, I took that to heart.
And in that, many, many, many individuals have expressed, but this would lead to chaos because there are so many jobs that are required to be done, but people don't want to do them, which is incorrect. You might not want to do them, but that doesn't mean that nobody wants to do them. Every task that you can think of that you think is required to engage in your reality, someone wants to do it. Someone enjoys doing it.
Can I ask a question?
You may.
Now that you have said this thing so very long ago, can I ask, do you have any idea when things are going to start working that way?
They are already working that way, my friend, and I would express to you that is the point. That is the reason that I expressed this to you in this moment, because you expressed paperwork. And there is paperwork and you have to do if you want certain things to be done. You don't have to do it.
Well, I had to do it to get money.
Or you don't have to do it. It already is in motion. It already is working, and in that it is merely a matter of each of you and whether you choose to be implementing it in your life or not. I'm aware that one of our participants This they is an individual that I frequently engage who is very familiar with this concept of if you perceive there is something that has to be done, you can delegate that task to someone else that wants to do it. You don't have to do it. And you can be paid. And you can be in compliance with the rules that are presently engaged, that you have to file this paperwork to receive the money that you perceive you need to exist and to pay your bills. You don't have to do it. Someone will do it. You think you have to do it.
Well, that someone has been my daughter, and she she doesn't like it.
Very well. I would say to you that this is actually somewhat comical. You have given yourself and actually validated my point. You have given yourself the direction and the permission to begin moving in that direction. You might not be comfortable with it because who you delegated it to doesn't like to do it.
True.
But you already began the action of not doing it yourself.
To some extent, yes.
To some extent.
Okay, I take your point. So if it's that possible, we can go further on it.
It is a beginning.
Yes.
Hi. This is the moderator here. I just want to point out that we'll end probably a little bit beyond 10 minutes past the hour. So we got a little more than 15 minutes left.
Thank you, Elias.
You are very welcome, my friend. I would express tremendous acknowledgement to you and congratulations in all that you have been accomplishing. And all that you have been letting go of. Also, a tremendous acknowledgement to you in your choice to be engaging, working part-time with children. Congratulations. That was an excellent choice for you.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
You are welcome. And I would express perhaps pay attention slightly differently to what you are doing in relation to shifting, because you are already doing it. You merely aren't crediting yourself with doing it.
That's why the percentages are important sometimes, but I need to understand that without...
But even the percentages, that wouldn't have mattered at all, because I could give you a percentage in how much you are accomplishing or what you are doing or how much you are shifting, and you don't see it. Therefore, what does it matter? It is meaningless. You wouldn't believe me because you don't see it.
Well, I feel like it's there. You know, I'm not quite experiencing it, but I feel like it's there.
And it is. And I would express to you my tremendous encouragement and congratulations, which I would say to you genuinely incorporates much more meaning than any percentage.
Okay. Thank you.
You are very well.
Hey, Elias. This is Paul again. Maybe this is a common question that other folks have, but I was job hunting the past few months, found a job at a science lab that I thought would be a perfect fit for me. And then all I have since then created is delays and delays and delays in regard to potentially getting that opportunity for employment there. Why would someone create delays when it seems that that job is the so-called perfect fit?
That is an excellent question. And also a very simple question. Because I will say to you, and in this, I would say that there are other individuals that are experiencing and creating very similarly and for very similar reasons. That, yes, you present to yourself a particular job that, as you express, seems to be the perfect fit for a job, and that if you have to have a job, this would be the job to have. Are you hearing me?
Yes, I am. I'm hearing your hints as well about if you have to have a job. So maybe
what
I'll need to be.
What I say to you, my friend, is that there is definitely an aspect of you, and this is very similar with other individuals presently also. There is a division that is occurring. There is a genuine aspect of yourself that believes that you have to have a job. And that you should have a job. And that you need to generate a particular amount of money. And that the money is very significant. And it is significant for more reasons than merely sustaining you physically, financially. There are more reasons than merely that the money is important. But in that, there is another aspect of you that once you aren't working at a particular job, don't actually want to be. You believe you have to, you believe you should, but you don't necessarily want to. And those two factors create two very different energies. And those two energies are at odds with each other. And therefore, what you do is you create in a very positive manner, and other individuals are doing very similarly, in which you present positive opportunities to yourself, and you validate yourself in what you can create, that you are doing it, and you present to yourself jobs that seem to be attractive or seem to be offering a sizable amount of money or seem to be offering a type of work that is somewhat interesting to you. And therefore, in one direction, you have something to acknowledge yourself with, that you are doing it, you are creating in that manner, you do have the ability, you do have the power, But you also have the other energy, which is expressing that you don't actually want the job. And it isn't that you don't necessarily want that job. You don't necessarily want any job.
Yeah, I can kind of see that battle going on, and that's probably why I'm creating other forms of financial activity.
Yes, and in that, I would express that you acknowledge that to yourself also, but there is that question. Is this actually really sustainable? Can I actually continue to do this? Or I probably can't continue to do this, but I am doing it partially. But it isn't the same as a job. It isn't as consistent. It isn't as predictable. It isn't as absolute. And therefore, there is that question. But even with the question, you are also being successful in those directions. What I would say to you, my friend, is two factors. One, credit yourself tremendously with all of these factors that you actually are accomplishing, because you are. And that is tremendous and deserves to be acknowledged and to be credited. And then give yourself permission to stop fighting with yourself. Decide in this present now, not forever, but in this present now, what is the most important to you in relation to what is the most comfortable? The reason that I say that is because I very much acknowledge you that it isn't necessarily that you don't want that job, but that you merely don't want any job. And I acknowledge that. And I acknowledge the validity of it also. It is valid. But it also is a timing factor. And in relation to that timing factor, you might not actually want a job, but it may be more stressful for you to not have one. Therefore, it may not be a matter of the black and white, either have one or don't have one, but rather it may be more of a matter of letting go of the fight within you and recognizing what is more important. Not to fight with yourself because you don't want a job. Not to fight with yourself because if you have a job or if you take a job that you are giving into conventionalism or you aren't expressing your creativity fully, but rather being more in the now and being more present and acknowledging to yourself once again, one of our old concept of the least conflict scenario. And in that, recognizing that not forever, not even for any long term, but merely for now, what is more important to you, meaning what is more comfortable for you. And if it is more comfortable for you to not have a job, then stop the fight in fretting over not having a job. Therefore, in either direction, if it is less stressful for you to have a job, then stop fighting with yourself about not wanting one. If it is not significantly stressful to you that you don't have a job and you actually are enjoying your time not having a job, then stop fighting with yourself, expecting yourself to get one. But in either direction, evaluate what is actually important to you, what is actually more comfortable for you, and then allow yourself to stop fighting with yourself in the other direction.
Thanks, Elias. Good stuff.
Very welcome. And I would express that if you do that, whichever direction you move in, you will likely be much more successful.
This is the moderator. We do have a few minutes. For a quick question.
I would have a quick yes or no question. Christoph here again. So the question would be, does coffee accelerate the graying of the hair? I'm not sure if my intuition is right about that, so I thought I'd ask you. The question is, does coffee accelerate the graying of the hair?
It depends on the individual. I would not say a blanket statement for everyone. For some individuals, yes, it can, but not everyone. And it definitely is not a general statement that it would for most individuals. No. But it can. Because it incorporates an accelerant. Therefore, in incorporating that component of caffeine, for some individuals, that accelerant can actually generate that action. Yes.
Unmuted.
Would that be the case for me then, according to my beliefs?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. Thanks a lot.
You are very welcome.
You are very welcome.
I have been thoroughly enjoying this conversation with all of you and am tremendously looking forward to our next meeting and anticipating our interaction very soon. I express tremendous encouragement to all of you and great acknowledgement to each of you in what you are accomplishing and an encouragement to each of you to be acknowledging yourselves more and to be crediting yourselves more with what you are accomplishing, because you are accomplishing more than you think. In tremendous lovingness to each of you, in dear friendship, as always.
Wow.